I'd like to make one last comment today before we move into Yahweh's testimony. There's a concept in the military parlance called mission creep, whereby you do something that you say is restrained and minimal. For example, the Iraqis just asked moments ago for the United States to launch airstrikes against ISIS. Well, that's not going to work. It's going to make a bad situation worse. So then what? Then you're going to send in American trainers to help prepare the Iraqis, which we failed to do over a decade, to be able to achieve victory over ISIS, but that's just going to have Sunnis better equipped to kill Shias better equipped to kill Sunnis. And that's going to fail because the Sunnis are going to attack the Americans, as will the Shiites that we're training. And then you're going to need to send in troops to protect the trainers. But then that will be an inadequate force for them to do that job. And so all of a sudden you're back into an invasion of Iraq, which is just going to infuriate the entire Sunni world on behalf of Shia Islam. It's called mission creep. It's what happened to America in Vietnam. It has a zero chance of success. It will just leave more coin spilled, more blood spilt, more shame on the American conscience. We created a mess that we cannot uncreate. There was no success in Iraq. Nobody died there for glory. Everyone that died there in vain, just as they did in Vietnam. We can't solve that problem. We can't go fix what we broke. It's forever broken. The only thing we can hope is that America stops supplying weapons to Saudi Arabia, to Qatar, to Kuwait, to the Mujahideen that are fighting in Syria and Iraq, that we stop supplying weapons to the world, and that we withdraw our military, and we shut up. If we do that, the carnage will be at a minimum. But if we continue to do what we're doing and engage our military around the world and pretend like the world is ours to control, and we continue to supply these amounts of weapons, then the death toll is going to go from the tens of thousands to the hundreds of thousands to the millions to the tens of millions. And ultimately, it's going to be in the billions. And there'll be one nation to blame. One. The United States of America. Everything we're reading here is a credit to what Yahweh said in Yeshaya 17 and 18, where he talked about the terrorist destruction of Syria and how it leads to World War III, with America playing the dominant and derogatory, duplicitous, arrogant, and destructive role. I mean, if there were ever a time that I would beg my country to just stand down, don't engage. It's our engagements that have caused this problem. Disband the military. Don't deploy it. It's now. And I would encourage Americans to do what Yahweh asked. This is Yeshaya 51:4. Listen, pay attention to me so that you can respond appropriately to me, my family, and my people. To me, listen, carefully considering, weighing, testing, evaluating, and thinking about what you hear, and then respond. Because indeed, the Torah, the source of teaching and guidance from me, shall be brought forth and shall be disseminated. And my means to justify the process of resolving disputes will accordingly shine upon and enlighten the family. This is the very Torah, of course, that Christians, beguiled by Paul, thinks that has been done asunder, that it has been nailed to the cross, that it no longer pertains, that it no longer has any merit, that it is was a mean-spirited set of laws that were incapable of saving anyone. And God says, no, it's my Torah that is coming forth. It's my Torah that you need to listen to and respond to. It's my Torah that you need to carefully consider, weigh, test, evaluate, and think about, and then respond to. It is my Torah that I am disseminating, not annulling. And he was disseminating through every footstep, every response, every word of Yahusha. That it's his Torah that provides the means to justifiably resolve disputes through the very promises that Yahusha kept. Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah. And it is this Torah that shines upon and enlightens the family. It's God's source of enlightenment, his source of enablement, his source of teaching and guidance. Then he shall reveal the glorious presence and the manifestation of power of Yahweh. And all living creatures, they will see Yado, the unity of Yah. Indeed, he is the word, the verbal spokesman and mouth of Yahweh. He's speaking of the Masiyah, the implement, doing the work of Yah. Yahusha, meaning Yahweh saves. Yahusha is a manifestation of Yahweh's power. He is a diminished presence, corporeal presence of Yahweh. And all living creatures were given the opportunity to see. Now, this is speaking about not only his last visit, but his next. Because when he returns, the whole world will see him at one time. And when he returns, there'll be no Trinity. There'll be no God the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. The Christian Trinity will be completely obliterated as a lie. When he returns, we're going to see Yahweh. And there'll be no confusion that Yahusha was simply a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. I use the expression many times. I could have a gold coin sitting in front of me, and then off 10 yards away, I could have a mound of gold bars. So you could have this mound of gold bars sitting in the room opposite of the desk that I'm sitting at now that could be 10 foot by 10 foot by 10 foot high. A literal mound of gold. And on my desk, I have a gold coin. They're the same thing. They're just not the same amount of the same thing. And that really is the difference between energy and matter. Energy and matter are exactly the same thing. They're just not the same amount of the same thing. That the speck of matter is like the coin that is on my desk, where the energy that is is equated to it is the mound on the other side. Yahweh is spiritual. He equates himself to light, which is a pure form of energy. And there Yahweh is essentially infinitely greater than any corporeal manifestation of him because of E equals MC squared. Mass has to be multiplied by the square of the speed of light to be equivalent to the same amount of energy. That's all Yahusha is. And so when Yahweh returns, the whole world's going to see him at once, something that Yahweh also confirmed, Yahusha confirmed, and they're going to recognize that God is one. The set-apart spirit is just part of Yahweh, set apart from him. And we're also going to recognize that Yahusha is nothing more, nothing less than the corporeal manifestation of the word of Yahweh. And here this word is being equated to Yahweh's Torah. Yahusha didn't say anything that wasn't already presented and affirmed in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. You want to know him? Read the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There you will find him, standing right before you. God goes on to say, this is Yashaya 40, 10 and 11. Look and see. Pay attention. Behold. Henna, that's the, Henna is the, is comprised as the, actually the name, if you will, of the two letters that are repeated in Yahweh's name. Yahweh's name is comprised of four letters, two of which are repeated. It's the henna, which means behold, that is written twice. It's depicted in the original alphabet of Hebrew as a person standing up, reaching up, looking up to God. And so it means, behold, pay attention, look and see, reach up, stand up, engage, pay attention. And there's two of those in Yahweh's name. They stand on either side of the Hebrew wa, which is pronounced as we would pronounce the vowel O. The W in English is also very often a vowel in addition to being a consonant and pronounced O. You'll find it in so many words, O-W, like own and oath and owl. You know, it's on and on. Well, the two hennas or hay in Yahweh's name stand aside the wa, and the wa is depicted as a tent peg. Anyway, I say, tent peg? What's that got to do with the two people standing? Well, the tent peg was what you used to secure and enlarge a home. The more formidable the tent peg, the larger the tent home could be, and the more secure it was. The whole purpose of the covenant is men and women represented by the two people standing, husband and wife, mother and father, Abraham and Sarah, coming together to enlarge a secure home, which is the covenant. And this is facilitated by the first letter in Yahweh's name, which is a yod or yad, the Hebrew word for hand. It's God's hand reaching down and out to us with an open hand to lift up those who, behold, pay attention to him. So it says, look and see, pay attention and behold, Yahweh, see even the nature of this looking up and behold in Yahweh's name. It's written right there in those four letters. Our upright one and our foundation arrives with the blast of a trumpet. He is the sacrificial lamb. We'll be back in a moment. Yahweh's speaking to us in first person, and he tells us, please, look, pay attention, behold Yahweh. You know, if you're reading his Torah, you can see him. It's right there before your eyes. His very nature, his desire, his great want for humankind, which is for us to want to know him and to engage in a relationship with him. His power, his brilliance, all there before you. Just look at the words. Look and see. Pay attention. Behold, Yahweh, our upright one and foundation. The concept of upright one, the very foundation, the Edonai, is so vital to understanding who God is and what he's doing. What he's trying to convey here is that he stood up for us so that we could stand with him. That's why the two letters that are repeated in his name have two people standing up, reaching out for his hand. It is, but not just Yahweh is the upright one, the Edom, but that every time Edom is used in the Torah, it speaks of the foundation of the tabernacle, of the tent of the witness. And it says that of the tabernacle and in the home of the covenant, that it's not just the foundation of it, which is the Torah, but it's the upright pillar that sits in the middle of the tent of the tabernacle to raise the roof. The taller and the more sturdy that pillar is, the larger and more secure the home. Higher its ceilings, the bigger its diameter can be. And so God says that if you want to see me as I am manifest before your eyes, I am based upon the foundation of Edom. I am the upright one, the upright pillar of the tabernacle, the one who stood up for you so you could stand with me. And that's why it's the upright pillars of the doorway to life that are the sign where the Passover lamb's blood are smeared as the doorway to heaven. It's those upright pillars that form that doorway. It's why on Mount Moriah, which means revere Yah, why Yahusha was hung on an upright pole, on an upright pillar. There's no cross there. It's an upright pillar. And all of this fits together. It all paints a picture of the means that God used to justifiably resolve our disputes is that he endured the consequence. He endured the penalty for what we had and have and will do that is in conflict with his instructions. He is the upright one who comes as the Passover lamb, all to resolve any issues that separate us from him. Yahweh, our upright one, and foundation arrives with the blast of a trumpet. Now, this blast of a trumpet is interesting because what God is there is one of the seven Moed Mikre that is associated with the blast of a trumpet. It's Teruah. And the Teruah actually means to blow a ram's horn, a shofar. And it is Yahweh who will come for his family. At the time that he's really begging us to pay attention to him, to notice who he is, to embrace his Torah, is this day, right now, as the world is evolving towards the tribulation and to its demise. He says, this is the time you want to be looking up to and noticing Yahweh and embracing his Torah and considering his Torah. Because he's going to come with a blast of a trumpet. On Teruah, he's going to come and gather his children and bring his covenant children home. And if you're paying attention now, you won't have to endure the tribulation. You will be able to be brought home to Yahweh. Now, we may, as we discussed in the program last week, we may endure the first 1, 2, maybe even 3 years, but we may endure the beginning of the tribulation. But the beginning of the tribulation is horseplay compared to its conclusion. Yes, the beginning of the tribulation is going to involve the Magog War. And the Magog War is going to be devastating, particularly on Yisrael. It'll be devastating to the Muslims who persecute, to prosecute it, because they will all be annihilated. But God's going to keep us out of the part of the tribulation where the Torahless one, the manifestation of Hasatan, the adversary, just wreaks havoc on the entire world. And so that is the blast of the trumpet that we ought to be listening for if we pay attention now to Yahweh. Look and see. Pay attention. Behold Yahweh, our upright one, the foundation. He arrives with the blast of a trumpet. He is the sacrificial lamb. He is the proverb and parable, a picture of the word which is vivid and easy to see. Behold him, our recompense and fare for the passage and ransom. It's all associated with him. He does the work to pay our debt, to clear the way to appear before his presence. As a shepherd, he shepherds and leads, protects and feeds his flock. He is the sacrificial lamb, and he will gather his sheep. And in his chest, in his bosom, he will lift them up, nursing, nurturing, and guiding them. Wow, a complete picture of Yahusha. I have come to recognize, and I think many others have as well, that the most vivid, accurate, complete, useful, intelligent presentations of Yahusha are found in the Torah and prophets, as well as the Psalms. And that they are vastly more instructive than the eyewitness accounts. That if you were to dispose of the Christian New Testament in its entirety, of course you want to get rid of Paul's letters, they are blasphemy, as well as Hebrews and three quarters of Acts. But if you were to toss out the two eyewitness accounts of Matanyah and Yohanan, the two hearsay accounts of Luke and Mark, as well as the personal letters, and even Revelation, you'd lose nothing. Really, you'd lose nothing. It's all there in the Torah and prophets, as is this picture. He's the upright one. He's the sacrificial lamb who was affixed to the upright pole, paying the passage for our ransom. He does the work. He is the Maaseyah, the work of Yahweh, clearing the way for us to appear before Yahweh, who he's said is one. In fact, he is saying here that, look, behold Yahweh. He is the upright one. He is the sacrificial lamb. He is the word. He is the recompense for our passage. He's telling us that here, if you're focused on Yahusha, you're missing the whole point. Yahweh is the sacrificial lamb. Yahweh is the upright one. Yahweh is the word. He is our Savior. He's the one who pays our debt. He's the way to appear before him. Yahweh is the shepherd. He is the one who will gather his sheep, lifting them up, guiding them. Pertaining to these conversations, the word of Yahweh came to exist with Abram in the form of a personal, visual, and illuminating manifestation, which could be seen and experienced to say, do not be awed or intimidated, Abram. I am your protector, your defender, saving you from harm, your exceedingly great reward. And we're continuing to recognize that Yahweh's plan, his message is consistent. He is always the word. He is always conveyed through his word. And when he exists for us to witness him, then he becomes a personal visual manifestation of his very nature. He does not want us to be intimidated or awed. He instead wants us to look at him like we would look at our fathers, as our protector, the one who defends us from harm, the one who wishes to give us a very great reward. And God conveyed all of these words, providing perspective in our presence, saying, I am Yahweh, your God, who beneficially descended to serve, bringing you out and delivering you from the realm of the crucible of oppression and judgment, Mitzrayim, out of the house of slavery and servitude. You will not exist with other gods in relation to my presence. Yes, at the Council of Nicaea, at the victory of the Greek god of victory, where they conceived a god that was a man, and named him Jesus Christ. They ripped everyone who believed them away from the true God. He has a name. His name is Yahweh. He is represented by his word, the very words that they wanted to dismiss by regaling them, by placing them in an Old Testament. And yet it was Yahweh who came to deliver us, not from his Torah, but deliver us from religion and politics. That's what Mitzrayim represents. Political, religious, economic, and military oppression. Where the children of Israel were forced by the integration of politics and religion, the military and the economics of that country to serve as slaves with no freedom. God came to deliver us freedom. It's the primary story. It's the story upon which the Torah is based. There's liberation from religion and politics and militarism and human economic schemes through Yahweh's Torah guidance is the central story to God's Torah testimony. He came to be our liberator. It's the purpose of the Torah. Didn't come to enslave us. Man enslaves, God frees. And so he's saying, if you instead revert back to gods and the names that man has ascribed to them, that you will not exist in his presence. There'll be no reference to a Jesus or a Christ or an Allah or to a Lord in God's presence. If you cling to these names, if those names are how you refer to God, you will not be welcome. He says you should observe, closely examining, carefully considering this word and message as a clearly communicated and engraved prescription of what you should do to live, and as an enduring and restoring witness to your children forever. Right in the heart of the Torah and Shemot, and the book that describes the Exodus and our introduction to Yahweh and his name. He's saying that his Torah teaching in this regard is a clearly communicated and engraved prescription of what we should do in life to live, that it's his restoring and enduring witness for our children forever. Which means there can be no New Testament, no replacement of the Torah with the gospel of grace. Speaking of the inappropriate concept of a New Testament, Yahweh says in Devarim words, which is the concluding book of the Torah, you should not ever add to the word, which as a blessing, I am instructing and guiding you all with. And you should never subtract from it if you are to properly observe the terms and conditions of the covenant of Yahweh your God, which is a favor, I am guiding you. Wow. Well, the Christian religion added an entire book of books called their New Testament. And they didn't just add it to the Torah. They replaced the Torah with it. So they added their book while subtracting the entirety of the Torah. From God's position, that was the wrong thing to do. Muslims, of course, claimed that their Quran confirmed the Torah when it contradicts it in every possible way. Exclusively and without exception, be observant. Pay attention. Examine the evidence. Consider it as your goal. And pay very close attention to your soul, lest you forget or overlook the words which you have seen before your very eyes, unless they are removed from your heart. All the days of your life you should make them known to your children and to your children's children. Where are these words? Well, these words are in Devarim. This is the summation of the Torah. Yahweh has presented his words orally and in writing to his children. And it's these words, he says, exclusively and without exception, talking about the Torah and nothing more and nothing less than the Torah. The entirety of the Torah, exclusively and without exception. Be observant. Closely examine and carefully consider. This Torah as your goal should be your primary purpose in life, because it's the only means to engage in eternal life. It's the only means to become part of God's family. It's the only way to have a relationship with God. It is the sole means to salvation, exclusively. And without exception, be observant as your goal. And pay very close attention to your soul, lest you forget or overlook the words which you have seen before your eyes. You know, your soul is the only thing that can escape planet Earth. That's it. It's your consciousness. It's your ability to observe and respond to what you see. Unique consciousness that makes you who you are. You see, in eternity, you're not taking your body with you. You're not taking anything with you except your soul. And there are three eventualities for human souls. Those who pay attention, look up to Yahweh, don't subtract anything from his Torah, don't add anything to his Torah, make it their primary goal in life to pay attention to Yahweh's teaching, his guidance in his Torah. Those who come to know the terms and conditions of the covenant, which was just mentioned here, and respond, their souls will be enriched and empowered, enlightened. Their souls will be perfected and made immortal. Those souls who ignore all of this, who prefer religious alternatives, those souls will cease to exist. You will have lost, squandered your soul under those circumstances. And those who mislead, well, their souls will be incarcerated forever. We're considering what Yahweh had to say to us in his Torah. Dabarim is a presentation by Moshe after he has spent some 40 days and 40 nights receiving the Torah as a written document, and has had the opportunity to live within the Torah's guidance with the children of Yisrael. He is sharing with them what they ought to focus on, how they ought to view the Torah, how they ought to live with the Torah, how they ought to respond to Yahweh and his Torah. And so it provides marvelous guidance for us. It shouldn't be surprising then that the book that Yosha cited from the most was the Dvarim, which means words, to Deuteronomy as the concluding book of the Torah. Here's what we continue to read. This is all from the fourth chapter of Dvarim. And Yahweh spoke the word as God to you from the midst of the light, words, the sound of which you heard. But as a visual form, you did not see, but only heard the sound. And he told you all about his family-oriented covenant relationship, which he formed with you. Which is the result of the relationship he instructed and directed you, encouraging you to act upon the 10 statements that were written on the two tablets of stone. Now, it's interesting here that Yahweh, speaking from the light on the top of the mountain, actually shared his whole Torah with the children of Yisrael verbally. And of course, he shared it in writing, giving the written copy to Moshe. That written copy was kept alongside the Ark of the Covenant. It's still there. And he says, you know, you didn't see the visual form of Yahweh, but you certainly heard his voice. And by hearing his voice, if you listen to what he has to say, which you can listen to what he has to say, yeah, I understand that your voice and my voice isn't as resonant as his voice, but, you know, when you recite what he had to say in his Torah, as we're doing right here, you get to hear him just as clearly as the children of Yisrael did on that day. And you recognize that he tells us all about his family-oriented covenant relationship. It's the purpose of the Torah. And as a result of that relationship, he's providing this instruction and direction, all in hopes that we can act upon it. And that he has summarized his teaching, his instructions, and the 10 statements, writing them on two tablets of stone. And if you notice that those are broken into 3 plus 7. The first three statements are found on the first of the two tablets. And those first of three statements iterate that God has a name. His name is Yahweh. Yahweh says, I am your Savior. He tells us that he is saving us from slavery, from human oppression, from religious and political oppression. And he tells us that that you're not going to exist if you choose to associate with other gods. Then he denounces religion. He says, I don't want you making religious idols. I don't want you associating and congregating in a religious environment. I don't want you speaking on behalf of or devoting yourself to any form of deity associated with a religion. Then he tells us that fathers corrupt their children, and they do so through religion. And that it's not just one generation, but generation after generation. And then he says that thousands will receive his mercy by closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of the covenant. Folks, thousands amongst the billions that have come this way is one in a million. The covenant's not going to be very large. And yet Yahweh created the entire universe and authored the entire Torah just so that we could participate. The third of the seven statements that he etched on the first of those two tablets tells us that we should not negate the importance of Yahweh's name and that we shouldn't deceive, leading people to lifelessness. It is a condemnation of everything that religion has done. The religion of Christianity is especially guilty, as is Judaism, as is Islam, of negating the value of Yahweh's name, hiding Yahweh's name, and of preaching and teaching that which leads to lifelessness. Yahweh says it's unforgivable. Those are the first three statements that he scribed on the first of the two tablets. There are seven additional statements on the second tablet, and we will consider them on our program tomorrow. But between now and then, may Yah bless. We'll talk to you tomorrow.